Ramananda Prabhu.
That's me. Present.
I'm going to beg an indulgence from you, and I hope I don't upset anybody, but I had a few things, a few notes from last time, and I would like to just go through, just review quickly some of the points from a little, some of your reading that actually I missed. Is that possible? Is that, or would that upset too many people here?
That would upset me, I'd be a demon.
That would upset you?
No, I said if it did, I would be a demon.
Anyway, I was out weed whacking about 20 minutes ago, and then I realized I have this class and I have some notes here. Anyway, it'll help me because the five rasas, it's a little elevated. I know it's sort of basic, but at the same time, there's a progression to it, and it's a beautiful progression. So I'm just going to go quickly through some of the progression leading up to this. I left off at the 10 offenses. Of course, we mentioned this morning, Vaishnava Aparad, something to absolutely avoid, like the plague. It's the only thing that can stop your progress. Is Vaishnava Aparad. So, and it's no mistake, it's the first of the 10 offenses. In Krishna, he may forgive an offense, direct offense, but in the case of Ambarish Maharaj and in Gaura Lila also, the offenders were sent back to the Vaishnavas to forgive them for the offense. So it's something we should be aware of. So then also Prabhupada states that committing offenses or sinning with the idea that we can chant and purify those sins later, that's the greatest offense. So that was on a morning walk in Hawaii, Prabhupada said that. And someone followed that up with asking if the chanting was useless, if somebody's doing that. And then Prabhupada didn't say it was exactly useless, that it would take a long time to take effect. So, many of us, and I'm not excluding myself, if you chant one Namabhas, one reflection of the name, you just wipe your karmic slate clean. So there's Namaparad, or offensive chanting, and then there's Namabhas, and then there's Sudanam. So we're trying for Sudanam. And that's really the goal. Madhav Maharaj, somebody I really like, somebody I spent a little time with in Kartik. We did the Bhishma Vrata, the last 5 days of Kartik together in Vrindavan. And he was challenged in Florida during a class. And Krishna has a sense of humor because it was just the wrong guy to challenge. And so Samadhiji from another camp, I don't need to get into it, but you kind of get the gist of it. She said, the goal is Manjari Bhav. And Madhav Maharaj's reply was, the goal is Sudanam. And that's a more practical idea, is that we need to chant as purely as we can, and then we accelerate our progress. Then Prabhupada goes on saying, he's warning, you know, when somebody comes a little advanced, you know, a little, they have some working relationship with the philosophy, naturally people are going to come and they're going to want to take instruction. And that ends up in people coming in the, you know, with the request to become a disciple. And so it's interesting, and this is in 1968, I have that edition where Prabhupada's warning his disciples that this can deviate one from the path of pure devotion. If one simply starts taking advantage of material conveniences, you know, that are offered by disciples, and of course money not being the least of those, so one should be cautious. It's a hard thing. It's a hard one to avoid, I think, because it replays again and again. It's not exclusive to ISKCON either. It's all over the wherever there is guru disciple relationships. Then Prabhupada says the only desires to should be to render service. He mentions the four regs, those things to be avoided in the process. And when one does not follow the principle strictly, there may be severe disturbances in the discharge of devotional service. Then there's some warning about the unwanted plants, the weeds. And the plant of devotion grows luxuriantly, reaches the ultimate goal. But then if you're not weeding a garden, anybody that's dealt with a garden knows the weeds have to be dealt with. So I have to tell you a funny incident many years ago in L.A. I was in Krisha Karada's office. And Sri, I think his name was Sridham, this devotee I really liked. We were in the office and we were talking. And we looked out the back window of Krishna Karada's office and we saw a couple of devotees. I recognized one of them. A couple of devotees had motorcycles, and not small ones, like these big hogs, you know, I mean, honking motorcycles. Not only that, they had leather jackets with some kind of, you know, big kind of thing on the back of it, like they belonged to some gang or something. And I said to Sridham, I said, well, it looks like somebody's got a weed in their devotional garden. And Sridham said, looks more like a tree to me. So if you're not careful, a weed can become a tree, you know. So let's see. When there's different stages. Some people are attracted to religious rituals. I mean, this all comes from past lives. Some people are into improving economic conditions. Some may be a natural vaishya or something. Somebody, but the whole idea is to eliminate all desires for speculative knowledge or any of that, and not even to want to desire to merge into the Lord's existence. So there's many phases of spiritual knowledge and transcendental bliss. And there are also many stages in bhakti, and that's where some of the controversies come in. I remember I was really impressed with these pre-Brajak Swami came to L.A., and I heard a story where he was, Prabhupada had gone to Iran, he was in Tehran, and he became such a good yoga teacher that he was teaching the daughter of the Shah that was later on overthrown there. And so he was in with the royal family teaching yoga. And I think he saw Prabhupada in India, actually. And Prabhupada, he can see, you know, he has vision, so he can see what's going on. And he looked at Pribhajak Swami and he said, you should be careful. You may come into some mystic cities the way you're practicing this yoga. And interestingly enough, he's a huge name in the yoga community. He's no longer with the movement. But anyway, so these things, all these mystics, yoga, rituals, speculative, they have some taste. There's some bliss that goes with them. But the rewards of these practices are they're only attractive until as long as one's not elevated to transcendental loving service. So that's the topmost ecstasy that anyone can experience, and everyone can be awakened. Then Prabhupada gives the example: just a person bitten by a serpent can be awakened by ammonia. Prabhupada had a background in pharmaceuticals. And I know exactly what he's talking about because I spent 4 years in a hospital pharmacy, and he's talking about amyl nitrate. And they made these snappers out of them. When I was in the military, they were in a woven piece of cloth, and you just snap them. And you inhale the contents of that thing, and it causes an adrenaline rush. You know, if, you know, really a drug. It's an experience. So Prabhupada's saying ammonia will wake, just like ammonia will wake a person that's losing their consciousness from the effects of a snake bite. So then Prabhupada says, after speaking this way about devotional service, Lord Chaitanya begins to describe devotional service and its symptoms to Srila Rupa Goswami. And so he's saying, there's other system. They say you should give up all desires. Our line, they say, you become desireless when your only desire is to advance in Krishna consciousness, that you're allowed desires. You should maintain your health. It's service to maintain this body for your service. So you can have desires for health and to advance in Krishna consciousness, and then you're still desireless. And Prabhupada says something interesting in Krishna consciousness: no scope for worshiping any demigod or any other form of Krishna. And that's interesting. He calls these contaminations. So this gives you a hint what a pure devotee is. And then he says a devotee should accept favorable things, reject those things. Interesting, we hear in Nectar of Instruction, reject those things unfavorable. Here Prabhupada says reject those things that increase the demands of the body. So the idea is, and I thought at this point that diets, you know, sometimes the devotees get into diets and there's a controversy, long-standing controversy surrounding, you know, if you just should accept prasadam, or, you know, you should, you know, get into these health kicks or whatever. And there's some sort of a compromise resolution. I mean, there's times when you accept maha and you're not considering what it's in. I know Radhan is fond these days to tell a story about our experience at Tota Gopinath a few months ago. When she had she got sick and her insides became unglued, and you know, and that was going to affect our schedule. We only had 2 days in Puri, and we had to you know, go around to all the holy places, and we go to Gopinath, and there's a group of devotees from Russia or Italy that had arranged, and that was clever on their part. If you ever go to Puri, you can arrange noon prasadam at the Tota Gopinath temple, and I'm sure it's excellent. But I was we were invited, but I said, no, that's all right. And Radhan said, no, I can't, I'm sick. So he insisted, but we didn't do it. Then he goes in the back, and I think he got some maha. I think he got two leaf bowls with sweet rice, and he hands it to both of us, you know, one bowl for me, one bowl for her. And she's just looking at me, and, you know, we're on an auto rickshaw, and we've got 4 hours of parikram to do. And she's, like, smiles and downs it, you know. Not a problem. 'Cause, and this pujari said, this is medicine. This will cure all diseases. And he was right. You know, it didn't make sense materially for the condition she was in, but it worked. So let's see. Pure devotional service means engaging all the senses in the body. And any bodily identification with race or country is not favorable. So any designation, you know. And it reminded me of this one African American devotee who asked Srila Srinivasa Maharaj a really odd question one day. I don't know what he was thinking of, but he said, Maharaj, were there races in Satya Yuga? You know, Satya Yuga is the golden age. So he's in a black body. So he's asking, you know, if it's all whiteies or something in Satya Yuga. And Srila Srinivasa Maharaj, she kind of paused for a minute or two to kind of, you know, it was kind of an odd question. And then he answered, yes, hungsas and paramahungsas. And that's what you got in Kali Yuga. I mean, in Satya Yuga. And Kali Yuga, everybody, of course, Prabhupada says, is born less than Sudra. So the senses must be purified, and it's possible when one purely understands he belongs to Krishna, and his life belongs to Krishna. And I think Janasupriya Prabhu and others have mentioned that there's a place in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya says, if you say with sincerity, you know, that I am yours, you know, if you do that with some sincerity in your heart, you're accepted by Lord Chaitanya, Krishna. So a pure devotee accepts transcendental loving service, rejects all kinds of liberations, and then Prabhupada goes to the different liberations. Christians want to enjoy in heaven. Other, you know, Muslims also want to enjoy in heaven. And I even heard Srila Prabhupada years ago, someone told me that Srila Prabhupada told one of his servants that some of his disciples also had a desire for this heavenly enjoyment. So then Prabhupada says, Lord Kapila explains that a pure devotee hears the glories and transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is seated within everyone's heart. His mind immediately flows toward the Lord, just as the waters of the Ganges flow toward the sea. It sounds like the prayers of Queen Kunti. And this is spontaneous attraction. This is Raga Marg. So this is most important stage to come to. And this is a stage of purity. And there's no motive at this stage. And again, the five types of liberations to become, you know, to live on the same planet with the Lord, same opulence as the Lord, same form of the Lord, or merge into his existence, all this stuff is, it's rejected by the pure devotees. Because, why? Because the devotee is so much absorbed in the loving service of the Lord that he has no time to think of any benefit beyond his immediate engagement. He's fully engaged. His mind, his senses, his soul, everything. So devotee doesn't think of anything beyond that engagement. And what to speak of the Mayavadis. What they've done, even if they manage that to enter into Brahman, into the light field, into the Brahma Jyoti of the Lord, they've solved their problem temporarily. They're not going to stay there, and they are going to be forced down anyway because they have neglected the lotus feet of the Lord. You can't do that and get away with it. So let's see. Okay, the two witches, Bhukti and Mukti. Srila Shinamarish said something beautiful about that. Actually, there's three planes of activity. And most everybody in this Kali Yuga is caught up in the first one, and that's exploitation, the plane of exploitation, trying to exploit something. And those that are engaged in that are called elevationists. Then, you know, the Buddhists, you know, they're famous for their renunciation. So that appears to be noble, you know, to just tyaga and everything. And so that's the higher path. And so that's attracted a lot of people in the last 30, 40 years in the West. You know, they think the Buddhism is pure and it's elevated and it's, you know, they can see it's better than exploitation. So that's the path of renunciation. But actually, it takes almost a pure devotee to awaken the third plane, which is dedication, that actually someone will achieve the highest ecstasy possible by entering to the plane of dedication. So, and let's see. So three stages of devotional service, cultivation, then realization of service. Third is attainment of Krishna prema. So we have a map from Bhaktivinoda It starts out with Shraddha, some faith, possibly from a past life, Agata Sukriti. We come and we hear something, it awakens something within us from our past, and then, you know, we like it, so we want to hear more. So what does that mean, Sadhu Sangha? And then we associate with sadhus, and then we, it's natural to want to offer some service or to do something in association with elevated souls. And so Bhajana Kriya. So, and then instructions, or it's a natural progression where the sadhus, they take compassion on the new person that's come into their association, and they give them some direction and they give them something to do. And so there's Bhajana Kriya. And then the big hump is Anatta Nivritti, where you got to get so busy with your service that you crowd out the bad habits. You let go of the things that are not favorable to your service. And then you become nishta. So you become fixed. And then you're not going bukti-mukti anymore. You're not wanting to enjoy something 1 minute, trying to tiag on everything the next. There's some steadiness. And if you attained that nishta, some steadiness, reasonable steadiness, you may not be done with anatta nivritti, but on the gross plane, you're not being beaten around. You're not being blown around like a leaf in the wind or something. Then you come to ruchi. You get some sort of a taste behind your steadiness. And your mind becomes peaceful also. It's a long road to become peaceful. It's hard to understand how agitated everybody is. This Kali Yuga, you know, short lives, you know, unlucky, misguided, but above all, always disturbed. It's a very disturbed age. And so you have to get to a certain stage not to be affected by what's going on around you. And it's important to reach that stage instead of being on a roller coaster or in a washing machine. Or, you know, it's very hard to make advancement when you're agitated. So then Prabhupada says there's the nine different processes. It begins with hearing, chanting, remembering, and faith. Gradually, your faith becomes stronger and more solid. You know, the beginning, the faith is soft and you can get disturbed. If you hear the wrong things or you're exposed to the wrong situation. So it's very important in the beginning how people are cultivated and how they're brought along. You know, you don't want to give people something they can't handle. You know, you get, and that's by installment. I heard that word around Shwashita Marsh. He gave a beautiful example, I think. This is his example. Anyway, you have a child who's just learning about the solar system. And so you have the blackboard, or you have the easel, and you have the planets around the sun. So then you're showing the sun, and to give the children a chance to grasp the concept, you tell them that the sun is fixed, it's not moving, and the planets, the nine planets, they're going around in their particular orbits, different orbits around the sun. And then after they grasp that, after they understand that, then you can tell them, okay, now the sun is not fixed, it's also moving. But if you try to give it to them all at once, they may not get it. The whole thing may be lost. So that's why qualified, bona fide spiritual masters, they have vision. They can understand the stage by hearing the questions, by seeing the behavior, by seeing the movement of the person that their student, their disciple. They can understand what stage they're at, and they can help them to the next stage. So it's generally by installment. And so if you hear things that are too high or things that are contradictory, it'll make a neophyte disturb their minds. You know, it's not, you know, so at one stage something may be true, and then the next stage you may have to give that up to accept a higher truth. So it's like that. So obviously in this way one becomes firmly fixed in devotion, acquires a taste, feels ecstasy, and this ecstasy occurs in the preliminary stage of guide. And I'm listening to these wonderful talks, and I do this one talk, I want to promote it. It's 1966, New York, Madhulila, 124, Madhulila 8, verse 124, 125. Mark that down. There's two in a row, two classes in a row, Prabhupada gives. It's just so beautiful. And within that, those classes, he says, he's citing, even in 66, he's citing that his disciples must be experiencing some sort of ecstasy to work day and night, you know, at what they're doing, you know, in devotional service. And he's saying that in those talks. So if somebody can maintain a very strict sadhana and work day in and day out, there's something, they're getting something from that. Or they wouldn't be able to do it. So we're headed to love of God. When one attains the third stage of transcendental love of God, okay, so now, so that's a long, that's why I wanted to go over this. I mean, that's a, you know, we're getting into the rarefied levels of bhakti here. So then you have transcendental affection, emotion, ecstasy, and extreme and intense attachment. And so now you have terms like raga, anuraga, bhav, mahabhav, and in this, they progress one stage to another. It's thicker, gets thicker. It starts out like sugar cane juice. We've all had cane juice in Hawaii, and then as you you cook it down, and it becomes thicker and thicker. It becomes like a syrup, and then finally it becomes like rock candy. So. And that rock candy, interestingly enough, is given as the cure of jaundice. So when one actually becomes situated on the transcendental platform, you become steady, okay. And then stage of understanding is okay, there's no fear of falling down. It's called sthayi bhava. And there are even stages beyond that, Vibhava, Anubhava, Sattvika, Vyabhichari. Ramananda, please forgive me. I'm going through this a little longer than I thought I would, but it's helping me also to get up to speed here. So after one attains these, there's actually an exchange of rasa, or transcendental activity of the Lord. So this is high talks. This exchange and loving reciprocation between the lover and the beloved is generally called Krishna Bhakti Ras. Okay. Steadfast or Sthayi Bhava, basic principle of Vaibhava and Sthayi Bhava are the auxiliary for the development of transcendental love. Okay, so then let's see. Absolute truth is known as nirguna, without qualities, because he has no material qualities. And it's in the Atmarama verse. So here we go. We're almost there. So I'm gonna just overlap one paragraph. I'm gonna start reading this from let's see here. I have to find my place, please. Bear with me. Because, you know, it's amazing how different the 68 version is. And the 72 version. Okay, I'm going to start reading from the book in front of me. And I'm going to overlap one paragraph. Ramananda Prabhu, that you did. Am I running out of time, by the way? Could you unmute?
Sorry, that took a while. Well, we generally never go past 7 o'clock, so whatever you can do.
Okay, I'm just going to start reading. The highest stage of ecstasy can be divided into 13 transcendental activities, which are as follows. 1, dancing. 2, rolling on the floor. 3, singing. 4, clapping. 5, bristling of the body. 6, thundering. 7, yawning. 8, breathing. 9, forgetting social conventions. 10, throwing down saliva. 11, laughing. 12, headache. 13, coughing. All these 13 symptoms do not awaken simultaneously or at one time, but they act according to the exchange of transcendental flavor. Sometimes one symptom is prominent, or other times the other symptom is prominent. Transcendental flavor is also divided into 5. Principally, the initial stage is called Santarati, appreciating of the greatness of the personality of Godhead by persons who are liberated from material contamination, but not exactly engaged in loving service. They are on the appreciative, neutral stage. Now, it's said that Prahlad Maharaj is in Santaras. Okay. The second stage is when a person appreciates that he is everlastingly subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he is everlastingly dependent on the causeless mercy of the Supreme Person. At that time, there is an awakening of natural affection as a grown-up son becomes attracted with the father's benediction. At that stage, a living entity wants to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead instead of being engaged in the service of Maya or illusion. This stage is called Dasya Rati. So this is a prominent feature of the way that Prabhupada introduced us to bhakti, is this service. And it was also emphasized by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Ramananda, should I stop for comments or no?
Yeah, I think you should just slow down. It was fine what you did before.
Okay, so I'll stop it here. Anybody want to say anything?
I had read a little ahead of time and I had questions and comments, but I'll defer that maybe until a little bit later.
Okay.
We've got like 20 minutes, so.
Okay.
I'd like to say something. I'd like to appreciate Vidagda Madhava Prabhu, your elaboration more on what we're reading, bringing up more examples. It's more like a class than just reading, and also some of your experiences, in India, and so anyway, I'm really appreciating this.
You know, I never had an experience like you had described about prasadam, but my wife did, very dramatic. She said before, I think in a class, we were traveling someplace, and she goes like really sick. And then we went into the Dallas temple, or I guess it was somewhere like that. And it was, we left Dallas and we were on our way. We stopped in Chicago. That's right. Went up country, went north. And in Chicago, she was just so sick. So she stopped by and she took a big, huge plate of prasadam. She had digestive problems and that cured her.
Yeah.
I tell you, it was like miraculous.
Yeah, I would, believe me, in my previous, years ago, I had very mundane ideas about what cures what. And the last thing I would think of to cure something like dysentery or diarrhea would be a Mahaprasadam bowl of sweet rice. But anyway, it just doesn't connect. Mundane, it's not mundane. And actually, prasadam can be so powerful that it can be your last thought at the time of your passing from this world. Have you ever thought of that? It's non-different than Krishna. But it's a meditation, just like everything we do, the chanting. Everything's a meditation, but the depth and the quality of the experience is, goes to a deeper and deeper level. So I mean, I used to read to the devotees in Boston when I was just starting. I would read Nectar of Devotion during Prasadam time. And sometimes in L.A., they'd have a recording of Prabhupada, you know, on a morning walk in India or something during Prasadam. And I liked it because, you know, but I've also met devotees that they're very quiet during that time. And they, you know, and they're totally absorbed in the experience of tasting the prasadam. So, should I?
Srila Prabhupada was like that.
Ah.
Totally silent.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's been stages of my nonsense, my history. Where I've watched, you know, sports or something, and I'm having a prasadam. It's stupid. It's really stupid. Now what I do is I have the Uddhava Gita, the 11th canto Bhagavatam, in front of me. And sometimes I like reading a verse and a commentary on the verse. But yeah, there's something special about prasadam, and depending on the consciousness. Even the consciousness that the bhoga for the Thakur, the deity, is purchased, that you're going to the market specifically to purchase something for Krishna or to get something for the feast, and then the consciousness that it's prepared, and the consciousness while it's cooked, the consciousness that it's offered, and the consciousness that it's accepted, it all has to do with the quality of the experience of prasadam. So I'm going to read the next paragraph. The next developed stage of transcendental love is called Sakya Rati. Here, one associates with the Supreme on an equal level with love and respect. That stage is further developed in the matter of joking and in exchange of different relaxations by laughing and so forth. This is called fraternity with the personality of Godhead without any bondage. Practically, at that stage, one forgets his inferior position as a living entity, although he has the greatest respect for the Supreme Person. Now, I have to say something here. Mahanidhi Swami, I was talking to him at Radhakund, this is years ago, and somehow I revealed my heart to him. I wanted his advice, and I was surprised that he started to reveal his heart back. And part of that conversation, he told me, and I have the utmost respect for Mahanidhi Swami. I think he's one of the most sincere devotees I've ever met in the movement. Gave up his American citizenship, just threw his passport away and got Indian citizenship. He's cutting no return ticket. He's pretty amazing, actually. He told me that his goal in this life is to arrive, you know, at a position where he actually feels that he's awakened his rati, his specific attraction for Krishna. And this man gives such powerful classes that he had six Central or South American devotees that wanted to take sannyas from him, and he declined by saying, "I'm not Krishna conscious yet. I'm not fit to give you sannyas," something like that. So he's telling me that his goal is to understand his rati with Krishna in this life. And then he tells me that this one devotee he has met, he thinks that he's stumbled onto his rati, or I don't think he used that word, stumbled, but he's come to understand what his actual relationship is with Krishna. And I said, "Who is that?" And I think at the time his name was Mahamantra Das, and he was living in the Gurukula building of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. So I made a beeline. As soon as I left Radhakund, I went over to this man. I knocked on his door. I went into his room, and I had to sit down. And he's very talkative, and he's an intense kind of personality. And he started telling me some stories, some experiences he had. And I don't want to get into that, but ultimately he worships Govardhan Shilas like Krishna Balaram. And he came to visit Hawaii some years back, and he's doing his puja, and he's calling out to Krishna, Kanai, you know, or Baya, Baya, he's calling for Krishna. And it was so natural, and I was having some sort of an experience behind it. It was, I've met devotees that have tried to explain some intimate details of Leela, I mean, over the years, a few devotees, but I've never felt comfortable, and sometimes I even let them know that I'm not so much interested to hear that kind of thing from them. But this person is, there's something special about him and his worship and his bhajan, and he's a very special person. So there's a story of Gorkhasuras Babaji Maharaj, a short one, that he's, the kids are throwing stones at him. He looks like a madman. I mean, sometimes devotees, they look like that. You know, they're not dressed properly, or, you know, they don't cut their hair, and they just look wild. They certainly don't comb their hair. So they're just living in some lean-to down by the bank of the Ganges. They don't even have a proper shelter. And these kids, they think he's, you know, some fourth generation homeless person, some crazy guy. And so they're throwing, pelting him with little stones. And Babaji Maharaj is batting the stones down, and he must have said this in Bengali, but he's going, Jasodamayi? No, Krishna? Krishna, you better stop that. Right now, I'm going to tell Jasodamayi. I'm going to tell her what you're doing. So stop it. You know? So sometimes it just reminded me, you know, in the matter of joking and the exchange of different relaxations, you know, some great Vaishnavas, they're on a completely different plane. They're in Leela. Anybody else? On Sakya Ras?
Well, I have just one comment to make.
Sure.
Like I said, I had read this beforehand, before class.
Sure.
Had a few minutes. And I came up with something interesting. Let me see if I can get my notes. In this section, there are words in here, like, for instance, from that first paragraph, and it says about transcendental rasas or relationships are divided to five. And then it says the initial stage. And then after that, there's words that Srila Prabhupada is using, like, one attains this stage, the second stage, and then at this time there's an awakening.
Right.
So there's a progression here, further development, stages. Even in the next paragraph, he says about preceding stages developed into. So we have our eternal relationship with Krishna, which mm-hmm. is reawakened. However, it appears that in the spiritual world, you can still develop your relationship in different stages. And however, Chris, we haven't read this yet, but you're going to come to the paragraph four down, and it's going to give the different examples of various devotees in these different rasas.
Right.
But those devotees are always in those rasas. So that's what I found difficult to understand. Is how there's a progression, different stages, etc. You know, you're talking about definitely moving upward. However, devotees are eternally in their different rasas, and even that stated here, it's in this one sentence. I don't think you read this one yet. The five primary rasas.
Right.
Constantly. Did you just read that?
No, I see it in the book. You know, I think there is an answer to that. I see what you're saying, and it's true that each successive rasa includes the others. You know, as you go higher, like Dasya Ras includes Santa Ras. Sakya Rati includes Dasya and Santa, and so on. So there's, in that way, there's development. And we may go through the stages of Santa, Dasya. That's a natural development. First, we have some bond reverence. Then we engage in some service connection. And then we find Krishna is our friend, and that our dearmost friend. And then we may even go on beyond that, but we may also find our complete fulfillment at that stage, you know, at any given stage. We may feel completely fulfilled with no desire to go to the next stage.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah, I was thinking something similar like that. I wasn't sure if that's correct understanding or not. But
we can kick that one upstairs if you want, but that seems to make sense to me. Let me get down to that paragraph, or let me see if I can get to that far. I don't know. Actually, we have 5 minutes or something.
Right.
When the transcendental flavor or taste of fraternity is further developed, is called Vatsalya Rati or filial affection. At that time, the living entity tries to be the parent of God. Instead of the Lord being worshipped, the living entity is the parent, a parent of the Supreme Person, becomes the object of worship for the Supreme Person. Then the Lord depends on the mercy of such pure devotees. This is called Vatsalya Rati. The Lord puts himself under the control of the devotee for being brought up nicely. Such a devotee attains to the position of embracing the Supreme Personality of Godhead or kissing his head. These are developments of the parental filial affection of the Supreme Lord. I mean, how exalted is the position of Mother Yasoda, Nanda? I mean, it's just off the charts. I love Damodar Month. I have some attraction for Damodar. Technically, you might say it's Vatsalya, this attraction for this. But everybody is charmed in Golok, you know, Gokula, Golok. Everyone's charmed by this little Makanchor, this yogurt stealer, right? So he's just bringing tears of joy to everybody and his antics throughout the community. So it's a wonderful month, and it's Kartik month, and it's a wonderful time to be in Vrindavan. And it's just a wonderful time to remember that pastime, but what kind of personality Yasoda must be to be able to feed Krishna with her, you know, as her child, and even chastise him. That's outrageous. She's chastising the Lord. That's ridiculous. But the Lord loves it, you know, and he wouldn't put himself in charge of any, you know, any, just anyone. I mean, what kind of it's just mind-boggling, both sides of it, that the Lord would put himself in that position with his devotee, and that the devotee would somehow relate to the Lord that way. It's beautiful. I mean, it's just beyond beautiful. So maybe I'll just read this next paragraph real quickly, and then you can take it up next time if that's the way you want to schedule it. The next developed stage is called Madhurya Rati, or transcendental exchanges of taste between the lover and the beloved in conjugal love. At this stage of loving affairs, the damsels of Braja and Krishna glanced over one another in conjugal love. At that stage of trans-loving service, there is an exchange of glancing and a movement of the eyebrows, an exchange of nice, pleasing words and attractive smiling between one another. Besides the five primary reciprocations of flavor, there are seven secondary reciprocations, consisting of laughing, wonderful vision, chivalry, pitiableness, anger, ghastliness, and devastation. Bhishma, for example, exchanged with Krishna in the transcendental flavor of chivalry. Hiranyakashipu experienced an exchange in the ghastly and devastating feature of the Lord. So there's primary and secondary rasas. So there's something that I heard Prabhupada say about the, and this is in 66 on that same recording that I told you about before, that he's laughing because he's talking about, you don't have to be educated, you know, to become a lover of Krishna. In fact, Lord Chaitanya, he's saying that these simple cowherd girls, not educated, they're the highest expression of love for Krishna. And they're thinking, oh, his feet, the soles of his feet, they're so soft, and he's walking on these, on the road, and there's these sharp stones, and they're just completely absorbed like this. And, you know, thinking about their worshipable but lovable Lord. So it's also, there's a verse that came up this morning, 10:3. Let's see, where is that? Remember that one that Pushkar quoted? Oh, here it is. It's 10:33:16. Beautiful verse, 10th canto. In this way, Lord Krishna, the original Lord Narayan, master of the goddess of fortune, took pleasure in the company of young women, of the young women of Braja, by embracing them, caressing them, and glancing lovingly at them as he smiled his broad, playful smiles. It was just as if a child were playing with his own reflection in a mirror. I added in a mirror. But this, you know, those that are not properly situated cannot understand this lila. And sometimes when I see persons that are going the wrong way with it, they don't understand it, they can't separate the mundane from the prakrita, from the aprakrita, I go to this. It's like a child playing with his own reflection in a mirror. That's it. That's the level of innocence connected with that. A Madhurya Ras. I mean, that's a safe way of thinking about it. First, you have to understand who Krishna is. Then you can understand his lila. Okay, so I think I've gone over. Did I go over?
Hi, Krishna Avidagya Madhavapu. Thank you for sharing so much with us. I just wanted to say one thing about the relationships. I heard from Janani Vas Prabhu that if someone has got a strong taste for pujari service, it could be an indication of a vatsalya tendency in that person. I thought that was quite interesting.
That is interesting. It may be a reflection of what he's discovered in his own, you know, in his own practice. He's been forever at Mayapur. I have the topmost respect for both the brothers.
Mm.
I mean, they're permanent fixtures. I can't imagine Mayapur without them.
Yes. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, that is interesting because they're dressing Krishna. They're feeding Krishna.
Yes, exactly. That's what he said. He said they're putting Krishna to bed, everything, you know. So it made sense like that.
Right. Right. Yes. That is interesting.
Yes.
And we get to put Krishna to bed here. Radhana does it mostly. She even has a little futon for them. She's got a little quilt in it.
Yeah.
Did everybody else drop out?
No, not at all.
Oh, I see unknown number. I'm looking at the list. It's bewildering. Okay, no problem. So, are we done? Can we...
Yes, thanks. Oh, that was very nice.
Anyway, thank you for the opportunity, as they say in Hawaii, mahalo. So,
I have an announcement. That's right. Okay, so next two Fridays, Mother Ermila is going to give a seminar. So she wanted to make sure that anybody is going to participate in this seminar is going to be really serious about the work that comes along with it, because she's had experience in the past where people just want to kind of be entertained and instead of actually doing a workshop, because this does take endeavor. I'm really enthusiastic about it, not only because of I want to be able to somehow improve the classes that I give, but I think that also it will, even if you don't have that motivation, just in order to understand our philosophy, I think that it will be helpful. She's got some sort of an ability. I don't know. I hope she's going to be able to relate this to us, but she can take such good examples that are really appropriate. And when you put an example for an aspect of our philosophy, it really comes home. It makes sense. At least for me, it does. Otherwise, it's just like philosophy is difficult to understand until you get a good example that you can down to earth. So anyway, so that's the next two Fridays. Then after that, we'll take this up again.
How much work, Ramananda?
I don't know. I think it's a matter of she wants you to go out and test these things.
It's going to be like a college course. It's going to be intense.
I mean, you know, how much
homework?
As far as time commitment, I don't know about that. I mean, how much can you really do over an hour? I think
PhD,
it's going to be more like a commitment to get at, to apply what's being taught. I think that's more, you know, like challenge you to go out and try it. I think that's what she was talking more about. We shall see, because she hasn't given me any handouts yet, so I don't know what to expect. It's going to be a PowerPoint along with it, so you have to follow along with a PowerPoint.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
It's not scaring me away. I'm game.
I know, like, the last class I gave, which was last night, I felt really like disempowered. And she was telling me before, that's because you're thinking you're giving the class instead of letting Krishna speak through you. So I wonder, how do you do that? So anyway, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh boy.
All right. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, that was really good, Vidagga.
Thank you, Prabhu. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Haribo.
Haribo.
Hare. Hare.